the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn, John Russell, Dan Novak, Faith Perlow, and Jill Robbins. Later, Katie Weaver and Ashley will present the next part in our series on America's national parks. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
A German farmer is suing automaker Volkswagen for being partly responsible for the effects of climate change. The man, Ulf Alhof Kramer, claims drier soil and heavier rains linked to climate change have affected his fields, cows, and forest operations. He said these effects have harmed his family business. In the case, Alhof Kramer calls on VW to end its production of gasoline-powered vehicles by 2030. German automakers rejected a similar demand from environmental groups last year. Farmers are already being hit harder and faster by climate change than expected, Alhof Kramer recently told reporters. He has argued that since VW is the second largest automaker, it should take responsibility for environmental damage linked to climate change. During a recent hearing, a court in the western town of Detmold asked Alhof Kramer and his lawyers to provide additional details to support their legal arguments, Germany's DPA news agency reported. The judge also asked whether the farmer had already suffered climate-related damages or is still expecting them. The next court hearing will take place on September 9th. The case is supported by the environmental group Greenpeace. The organization has supported similar legal efforts in Germany that sought to hold companies and the government responsible for the effects of climate change. Such cases have had mixed success. Some have been dismissed, while one made it to Germany's top court. Last year, the High Court in that case ordered the government to increase efforts to reduce carbon emissions. Volkswagen said in a statement that it aims to reduce its emissions as quickly as the business allows. VW has set a 2050 goal to cut carbon dioxide emissions to net zero. Volkswagen stands for climate protection and rapid decarbonization of the transport sector, but cannot meet this challenge alone, the company said. It added that such progress also depends on government rules, technological development, and buyer behaviors. VW said lawmakers should be the ones to decide on climate change measures. The company said it would defend this position and ask for the lawsuit to be dismissed. In 2015, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency discovered VW was using software that let diesel cars pass emissions tests, but then turned off pollution controls during normal driving. The company apologized for its actions and paid tens of billions of dollars in fines, business costs, and damages to car owners. I'm Brian Lynn. The American state of California might soon hold social media companies responsible for harming children who have become addicted to their products. Under a new bill that recently passed the state assembly, parents could bring legal action against the likes of Instagram and TikTok for up to $25,000 for harming their children. The bill defines addiction as children under 18 who are both harmed by social media and who want to stop or reduce time spent on social media, but they cannot. The bill suggests the harm can be physical, mental, emotional, developmental, or material. Business groups have warned that if the bill becomes a law, social media companies would most likely stop operations for children in California rather than face the legal risk. The bill would only apply to social media companies that had at least $100 million in total sales in the past year. The move appears to aim at large social media companies like Facebook and others that control the marketplace. The bill would not apply to streaming services like Netflix and Hulu, or to companies that only offer email and text messaging services. Assemblymember Jordan Cunningham was the creator of the bill. Cunningham used the term unfettered, meaning unrestrained or without limits, to describe how he views current social media use. The era of unfettered social experimentation on children is over, and we will protect kids, he said. Monday's vote was an important, but not final, step for the bill. The bill now heads to the state Senate, where it will be the subject of hearings and discussions among lawmakers and the bill's supporters and opponents. The bill gives social media companies two paths to escape responsibility in the courts. If the bill becomes law, it would take effect on January 1st. Companies that remove features that are considered addictive to children by April 1st would not be responsible for damages. Also, companies that do regular reviews of their policies to identify and remove features that could be addictive to children would not be subjected to legal actions. Despite those conditions, business groups have opposed the bill. TechNet, a group of technology leaders, wrote to lawmakers that if the bill becomes law, companies would end operations for children under 18. There is no social media company, let alone any business, that could tolerate that legal risk, the group wrote. Lawmakers appeared willing to change the part of the bill that permits parents to take legal actions against companies. But they did not present any idea about what to do instead. Assemblymember Ken Cooley said, as a lawyer, he normally opposes bills that create more opportunities for lawsuits. But he said lawmakers must change the dynamics of what is surrounding us, surrounding our kids. We have to do something, he said. If it doesn't turn out right,
we can modify as we go along. I'm John Russell.
China has not been using the kind of COVID-19 vaccine that has proven to offer the best protection against the virus. The country is working through its biggest coronavirus outbreak yet without a tool it could have started using many months ago. As early as the spring of 2020, the Chinese pharmaceutical company Fosun Pharma reached an agreement to distribute and later manufacture the mRNA vaccine made by Pfizer and BioNTech. The vaccine still has not been approved for use in mainland China. Health experts say that delay could lead to avoidable coronavirus deaths and deeper economic losses. Critics say China has had a policy of putting politics and national pride above public health. Studies have shown that mRNA vaccines made by Pfizer, BioNTech, and Moderna offer the best protection against hospitalization and death from COVID-19. Chinese vaccines made with older technology proved effective against the early strain of the virus. But the vaccine is much less effective against more recent versions or variants. As this evidence became clearer, even countries that first used Chinese-made vaccines have turned to mRNA vaccines for booster shots and new vaccinations. China still has not. Officials have not publicly said why they have not acted. The mRNA vaccines are approved in much of the world. The Associated Press spoke with a Chinese health official and another person directly involved in the talks. They said officials have held back because they want to create the technology in China and not depend on foreign suppliers. Neither person gave the AP permission to publish their name. For more than a year, China's current approach was acceptable. The country was able to keep the virus in control better than any other large nation with its strict zero-COVID policy. But the fast-spreading Omicron variant is testing that policy. Now, bigger and longer lockdowns are creating a greater economic and human cost. Other countries have been able to operate close to normal because their people are protected by vaccination or previous infection. But China must still depend on lockdowns to avoid rising numbers of hospitalizations and deaths. China may be changing its mind, however. The Communist Party-owned Global Times newspaper reported last month that Fosun Pharma is still working with health officials on its approval. And officials in Shanghai recently issued new policies that could permit the import of COVID-19 vaccines. For now, China is hoping for an mRNA vaccine from Abogen Biosciences. That is a company founded in 2019 by an American-trained scientist who once worked for Moderna. The company's vaccine candidate was successful in a small test in humans designed to measure safety, said a study that appeared in the publication Lancet Microbe. But large studies are needed to show whether the shot works to prevent infections. Such studies have not been completed. Even if the studies can be completed and the vaccine proves effective, experts say it will be difficult to produce all the shots that China needs. Abogin built a manufacturing facility in December 2020 that can produce up to 120 million doses a year. I'm Dan Novak.
Today, on Everyday Grammar, we will explore some differences in American English spoken in different regions or parts of the country. The United States is a large country, and there are areas where people use different words for the same thing or say the same words differently. Although school systems across the country teach standard American English, many Americans grow up speaking non-standard American English. These varieties are also called dialects. People may not even realize they are speaking a non-standard form of the language. Let us look at some vocabulary and pronunciation differences from different regions of the United States.
One of the main features of different regional varieties of American English is vocabulary. Different words can be used for the same idea or concept, depending on the region of the U.S., such as the Northeast, the South, the Midwest, or the West. Take, for example, a kind of cloth shoe that is worn for informal times or for sports. What would you call this? Many Americans in the South, Midwest, and the West Coast call sports shoes tennis shoes. It does not matter if they play the sport of tennis. The shoes just might be their everyday shoes. They call them tennis shoes anyway. In parts of the Northeast and some parts of southern Florida, they use the word sneakers.
Sugary, carbonated drinks have different names depending on where you are from. In the Midwest, the western part of the state of Pennsylvania, and parts of the Appalachian Mountains, especially in the state of West Virginia, people call the drinks pop. In parts of the Northeast and the West Coast, they are called soda. In addition, people in some southern states use one name for all those kinds of sugary drinks. They call it Coke, which is short for Coca-Cola.
For our final vocabulary word, we have the insect that flies at night in the summertime and lights up. In parts of the Northeast and West Coast, the word firefly is commonly used. In parts of Appalachia, the Midwest, and the South, lightning bug is probably most common. Sometimes people in the U.S. use both words.
In the U.S., people say some of the same words in different ways, depending on where they grew up. Take, for example, a small stream of water that flows into a river. Most Americans say this word as creek, with a long E sound, like in the word beet. But in some parts of Appalachia, like western Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and the Ohio Valley, you might hear this word with an I sound, as in crick, like in the word tip.
Our next pronunciation variation is a full merger of two vowels. The A sound, as in the vowel sound in bother, and the A sound, as in saw. In most variations of American English, these two vowels are separate and different. You can hear this difference in the words caught and caught. In some varieties of American English, especially in the eastern mountains of Appalachia, these two vowels have merged into one, like in the word caught. These two separate words, caught and caught, sound the same in that pronunciation.
Our final pronunciation variation is a difference in how many syllables make up the word caramel. Syllables are the parts a word is naturally divided into when pronounced. Caramel, two syllables, or caramel, three syllables, is a light brown candy made from butter, sugar, and milk. In much of the Northeast and parts of the South, this word is pronounced with three syllables, caramel. In parts of the Appalachian Mountains and much of the Midwest, many Americans pronounce this word with two syllables, as in caramel. These two pronunciations can have different meanings depending on the speaker or region. Caramel, two syllables, may mean a mixture of just sugar and water that turns brown when boiled. Caramel, three syllables, may mean the light brown candy. Today, we looked at some differences in vocabulary and pronunciation in regions of the U.S. There are several varieties of American English, including cultural and ethnic varieties, which we have not covered. If you liked learning about these variations in American English, please write to us in the comments. We would love to share more about this subject. Finally, let us end this report with some homework. Do you know of any variations or dialects in your first language? Or have you heard about other variations in American English? Write to us at learningenglish@voanews.com or in the comments and share what you know about language variation. I'm Faith Perlow.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
On our national parks journey, we explore a unique place where two deserts meet. The hot, harsh, rocky landscape is home to a rare and strange-looking tree. In fact, the park gets its name from this iconic plant. Welcome to Joshua Tree National Park in southeastern California. The limbs of Joshua trees stretch and twist upward in all directions. At the end of each limb are sharply pointed green leaves. The plant looks like a large cactus and can grow over 12 meters tall. But as the National Park Service explains, Joshua trees are not really even trees. They are succulents that belong to the yucca family. Succulents are desert plants that can hold a lot of water inside them. Joshua trees are not exactly beautiful. An early explorer to the area once described them as the most repulsive tree in the vegetable kingdom. But park visitors are amazed by the wild-looking forests of Joshua trees.
The Mormon religious group is said to have given the plant its name. Mormon settlers reportedly thought it looked like the Christian holy figure Joshua. His arms held out, guiding travelers to the Promised Land. Joshua trees thrive in the climate of the Mojave, one of two deserts within the park. The Mojave is a high desert. It is 900 meters above sea level. It is also relatively cool and wet. The Mojave Desert meets up here with the Colorado Desert. The Colorado is a lower desert. It makes up the eastern part of the national park. Much of the park sits within the overlap of the two deserts. The overlap creates a diverse ecosystem where many plants and animals thrive.
Within the park, you can find bighorn sheep, desert tortoises, iguanas, and black-tailed jackrabbits. The park is also home to 250 kinds of birds, like the red-tailed hawk, the roadrunner, and the Scots Oriole. After spring rainstorms, desert wildflowers burst to life in colorful display. The blooms on Joshua trees are bright white. Cacti produce bright purple, red, and orange wildflowers. The blooms last just a few weeks before the hot summer heat becomes too strong. Along with Joshua trees, large piles of rocks are another defining part of the park's landscape. The huge boulders sit stacked on top of each other. Roads and hiking trails lead visitors through paths of these boulders.
Joshua Tree National Park is over 320,000 hectares. It has many hiking and walking trails, from long hikes that take all day to finish to short ones, like the Hidden Valley Trail. This trail takes you through an area that was once a place for cattle-stealing cowboys to hide out. The area's massive rock piles made for effective places to hide in the desert. These huge boulder piles and rock walls have made Joshua Tree National Park world famous for rock climbing and bouldering. The park has more than 8,000 climbing routes. John Hockhausler often comes to Joshua Tree to rock climb and enjoy nature. He makes the 3-hour drive from Los Angeles, where he is a lawyer.
When you see the park from down low, it's beautiful. But when you see the park from 150, 200 feet up, it's amazing.
Renate Ehrlich visited the national park with Hockhausler. She is also a lawyer in Los Angeles. She had just tried rock climbing at Joshua Tree for the first time.
We love it. We come here to walk on trails. Last time we were here, we rode jeeps, which was so much fun. And it's just a great place. Great outdoorsy place. It's a lot of character.
I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.